What if you could help others to find the power to heal themselves? Physically, emotionally, and spiritually.
When I started teaching my classes, it was in 2002, and I was just doing the past life regressions and contacting the subconscious part. But then as the time went on and we found how powerful this was and what we could do with it, a lot of the students began saying, you know, advanced past life regression doesn't really tell what it's all about. This is so much more than that. We think you should change the name. So it was a few years ago, we decided to change the name to Quantum Healing Hypnosis Technique. And this is the healing technique that we've now been teaching it, well, since 2002, that's 12 years.
What if you could time travel with them? Visit mythical places or angelic realms, other worlds, other galaxies. Help others to speak to their higher selves. You can. Dolores has taught thousands of people from across the world how to use QHHT, and now you can learn her method by going directly to DoloresCannon.com. And don't forget to mention the discount code MORETALKS.
The comments and views expressed on The More Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the view of Kevin Moore, The More Show, or this radio station and its affiliate or sponsors. This show is for entertainment purposes only.
Broadcasting from the UK and across the world online, you're now watching The More Show and I'm your host, Kevin Moore. Now for the next hour, I'll be covering subjects that will open up your mind and provide you with information you may have never heard before. Now on today's show, I'm about to be joined with my guest, Jack Churchward. Now Jack served 6 years in the United States Navy and went on to earn his Bachelor of Science in Electrical Engineering from the University of South Florida. Now Jack has over 30 years experience in the aerospace and defense industry. In addition, he identifies himself as a Tibetan Buddhist. Now Jack's research into the life and theories of his great-grandfather, James Churchward, author of the books about the lost continent of Mu, is considered using his technical expertise, unique connections, special viewpoint, and access to a portion of James's original source materials. Armed with his knowledge and capabilities, Jack seeks to create a more complete understanding of James Churchward's theories about advanced civilizations. Jack Churchward, welcome to the show!
Well, thanks for having me, Kevin.
Okay, well, where do we start? Where would you want to start with this? And I think also, let's have that as the first question, but also, let's just get straight to the crux of what this is about, why you do what you do and what this is all about.
Okay. What it first started with me is that obviously I've known about my great-grandfather's writings on the lost continent of Mu and the books that he wrote back in the 1920s and 30s. And for a long time, people have communicated with me and they've asked me questions, what I thought about it. And I always repeated what my father told me. And he said that it was all a bunch of baloney. And so I always managed to, you know, I was in that camp. And eventually when I got the internet came, I managed to avoid it all until the internet came and I got my email address, jack@churchward.com, and the questions started. Well, I started to answer them the way my father would answer them, and which was, it's all a bunch of baloney. It's, you know, malarkey, and it's nothing to, he made it all up. After got a lot of emails and people discussing it with me, I found some of his, some of his scrapbooks were made available, and I took the opportunity to say, okay, I'm going to stop answering people, off the cuff, telling them that, that it's all baloney, and do my own research, look at both sides, the pros and the cons, look at some of his theories, and find out where it stands in my own mind. I have an electrical engineering degree, and I believe I'm able to understand physical properties of most things. So that's where I began about 10 years ago, to look at his theories and look at his references that he used, and which precipitated the first book, Lifting the Veil on the Lost Continent of Mu, Motherland of Men, which was his 1926, his first book on the Lost Continent of Mu. And I looked through the book, examined each of the things he said, and attempted to look at each of the references he made. In fact, in my version, there are two extra appendices, one of which looks at the authors and their background and how they're quoted, and the other one is on the quotes that he made, and I attempted to find the quote he included and, if I was able to, the quote that was, excuse me, from the original. And also included as an index and about 200 extra notes, which was my opportunity to look at it. And I presented it to Dolores Cannon at Ozark Mountain Publishing, and she was kind enough to like it and put it into print.
Okay, so what is the crux of it, though? Let's get to that. What is it that James concluded?
Well, James' theory was that when he was in the Bengal Lancers in India in the 1870s, he said that he had visited a temple and was interested in the symbols and things he saw on the temple walls. And he introduced himself to the Rishi and asked them about him. And eventually they became friends, and the Rishi, this is according to James' writings, and the Rishi sat and told him all about all these symbols, and he learned the symbols for a couple years. In some cases, it's mentioned that he spent 5 years there. And eventually the Rishi told him of some tablets that were contained in the temple vaults beneath. And eventually, James and him were able to sit down and look at them. And these were identified by the priest, or the Rishi, as the records of the Nakal Brotherhood, which was the ancient society or ancient brotherhood of individuals who maintained the wisdom and knowledge of the Lost Continent of Mu. In the tablets, it said that 100,000 or more years ago, this civilization had existed in the Pacific Ocean and was a highly advanced civilization. James identified it as higher than what he was in the late 19th and 20th centuries. And they were the ones was the Garden of Eden, according to James and the tablets he found. And they spread the civilization around the world, and James links it in his books to all the civilizations back to Mu, even the Bible. And about 12 to 14,000 years ago, James writes that the volcanic action and the and the collapse of the Archeon gas belts running around the world caused the collapse of Mu and its colony of Atlantis. And at the same time, the mountains were raised in other portions of the Earth.
Incredible.
And this Rishi, the priest, he identified himself as one of the three remaining people in the Nikal Brotherhood who had maintained the knowledge and wisdom. And he demonstrated some psychic powers to James, being able to put thoughts in people's mind and make them believe they were seeing things that weren't there. And he was able to withstand the fire. And there were a few other things that are fantastic that were he was interested in.
And who was this guy again that had these powers?
He was the Rishi that James met, and the Rishi showed him the tablets from the lost continent of Mu. He said that the tablets weren't made at Mu, that they were probably done in the great Uyghur Empire and transported back to India.
And where are the tablets now?
Actually, nobody's ever seen the tablets. Someone came out a few years ago and said that they saw the tablets, that they had found them and they were shown the tablets. But when they showed pictures of them, it turned out that there really were some Tamil writing, and one was a metal plate that showing some Biblios inscriptions from Beirut, Lebanon, the actual physical sheet of whatever metal it was is on display in a Beirut, Lebanon museum. So it's actually no one has ever seen the Nikal tablets that James reportedly found.
So James saw the tablets?
He wrote that he saw the tablets, yes.
And on the tablets contained information about the continent of Mu.
Correct.
And he was only able to transcribe them through the chap that he initially bonded with.
The Rishi, yes.
The Rishi. So it was only his transcription of them and not James's that the information came from about this continent.
Well, yes. And supposedly, well, James writes that he saw it in the 1870s, but he didn't tell anybody until the 1920s.
Okay. And was there a reason for that?
Not that I'm aware of.
No.
Had I found some tablets that indicated or that showed that there was an advanced civilization tens of thousands of years old, I believe I would have taken more than just a few minutes immediately after I find them to try to document them. If I could take a picture of them, if I couldn't, maybe try to write them out on paper or something and duplicate the symbols and then provide that information to the world and not wait 50 years.
Sure. Was he ever able to go back to this temple? Was anyone ever able to locate the temple nowadays?
Negative.
No. Okay. So it was really based on James's word that this actually existed, this whole experience.
That's correct.
Yeah. Well, based on that, what made you still want to dig into it? Was it the possibility of what if?
Well, I wanted to look at all aspects of it, and I didn't want to immediately just say, well, this is baloney and this is baloney, but I wanted to provide everybody, or anybody interested, I should say, the opportunity to look at the information that he had and the information that I was able to gather and provide both sides of the story. For instance, his belief, his statement that he was a colonel or lieutenant colonel in the Bengal Lancers, it really doesn't hold up very much. to be true, he was a tea planter in Sri Lanka in the 1870s. Not really a military officer of any kind.
What is some of the most empowering parts of the story then, in the sense of some of the lost knowledge that came from the continent of Mu that James was able to uncover?
Well, from my point of view, I wanted to look just at the facts. And if you look at just one aspect of it, his belief in the megalithic remains that are in Polynesia, he, for instance, mentioned that Nan Madol, the wondrous city, couldn't have been built by anybody but an advanced technology. But there are megalithic cultures that build megalithic structures today using ropes and manpower to drag these several ton structures, if they're already built or carved, or big columns. They do it, I don't know if it's regularly, but it's their tombs. And for instance, it's their, in Sumba Island in Indonesia, they have, I guess, a great big party and drag these things all the way from the quarry down to where they have to place it. And if you look online at Wally Wallington, who lives in Michigan, I believe, he's lifting 10-ton concrete columns by himself. He says he can move a 1-ton block 300 feet per hour by himself. And he's demonstrated, you can look at his YouTube videos, he can take a 10-ton column and drop it in a hole all by himself. Didn't have any other people giving him a hand. And if a person today with no advanced tools, he didn't have a bulldozer or anything like that, he just set up some chocks and moved the thing around, and just, it's really easy, he demonstrated. And like I said, there's the megalithic cultures in Polynesia that's probably, if you look at what is being done in Indonesia, they're the same thing could have been done all, you know, and in other parts of the world. And rather than blaming it or pointing it at advanced civilization or mental powers or whatever you're going to try to ascribe it to, but just brute manpower.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And a little bit of help from and understanding of physics and things. Well, as opposed to, yes.
You think even the Stonehenge and the Great Pyramids, you think that they could have been be replicated with non-machinery nowadays?
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at, like I said, if you go on YouTube and look for some of these, like Wally Wallington, he did he has a video out there that I just saw a few days ago, and he took and moved a 30 by 40 foot pole barn 300 feet in an hour. It doesn't show that he moved the pole barn, but it does show how he moved a 10-ton column and dropped it in a hole and set it upright.
Okay.
All by himself.
Okay. Yeah, well, it's possible, isn't it? I mean, there's a lot of people that say that it couldn't be done nowadays, but we'll link that video on this as well, just to show people the videos that you're referring to. It's interesting, isn't it, that you've got the camps that say it can't be done, and then, you know, there's other people out there saying, well, potentially it could be done. But we still have there's nothing documented, is there, as to how Stonehenge got there or how the pyramids really got there. There's just theories, isn't there? There's nothing in tablets, or there's no authoritative records out there, is there, as such? We don't know, do we?
Well, no. Thousands of years ago, if they wrote it on a piece of wood or it might not have made it.
No, of course not. That's why I mentioned that that tablets would be the only way to preserve such information. But there is not a lot out there, or nothing out there really. But yes, it's a possibility, like you say, that if they can replicate it nowadays, then it's, you know, it's, yeah, I could see that.
Well, it's just still a throwback. The megalithic culture that exists there in Indonesia and in other places, the continuation of a culture and a way of life that goes back centuries. So it's not hard to believe that if they can do it in Indonesia, that the Sardalane dynasty built Nan Madol in Pohnpei, because they've done some research on that, and they found that through radiocarbon dating, that they began building that in the 12th or 13th century, that it doesn't go back tens of thousands of years, that it wasn't built by an advanced civilization. They know where the rock, they know where the stones came from, and obviously they started building it much earlier or much later than people believe.
For sure. So you're sticking to the facts with James's work.
Correct.
But then he did talk about the culture of Mu, I've got the name right, as being very highly advanced.
Correct.
So, as in advanced, as in, we're flying. I was going to use the word flying cars there, but it's not quite that, is it? No, is it?
Vimana, he said. He got the Vimana from the Ramayana.
What does that
mean? Hindu. A Vimana was a flying. In some places, it's translated as a flying palace.
Flying palace.
Mm. And supposedly in the Ramayana, it speaks of these Vimanas flying from one continent to another and using terrible weapons that people today equate to laser guns and hydrogen bombs and things like that, or atomic weapons.
Okay, so where does that fit in with your paradigm of thought then?
Well, if somebody showed me a working or the remains of a flying vehicle from 20,000 years ago, I'd be more inclined to believe what was said. But I took it straight on and I just tried to look at the facts. But there are two facets of James' work. Now, he also mentioned, like I mentioned previously, that the Rishi had paranormal powers. And James said he saw them. Now that's brings up the question: Did James make up the story of Mu so that he could have a place for someone with these powers for it to develop from there? Or, are they two separate issues? His thoughts of the physics, the paranormal powers as a product of their civilization.
Yes, absolutely. And I suppose the name Atlantis wasn't, you know, back in that time, wasn't the, you know, when did he, when was the discovery? It was 1870s, right, when he discovered the tablets.
That's what he said, but
yeah.
He didn't write about it until the 1920s.
No. So 1870s. And then at that time, I mean, you know, there was very little being written about Atlantis. I think in the
except by Mr. Donnelly, who the former U.S. congressman that wrote the definitive book, The Antediluvian World, Atlantis, the Antediluvial World. I believe he wrote it in the late 1860s.
Right, right. I knew of Edgar Casey in the late 1920s, 1930s, bringing such information through about Atlantis. There was information in his readings that he brought through on Atlantis. So there was another chap that was authoring a book on Atlantis at that time as well. Okay, well, that's interesting.
As far as Atlantis goes, though, let me mention that James didn't believe that everything originated on Atlantis. In his writings, he wrote that Atlantis was a colony of Mu, and that Mu was the Garden of Eden, the motherland of mankind, as he wrote. And that Atlantis was colonized by the people from Mu.
You know, there was some theories that the whole world was Atlantis. It wasn't just one continent. It was the whole world was Atlantis at one time. Just one theory that came to me. But if there was a continent called Mu, and there was some sort of polar shift, could a pole shift have caused Mu, the continent, to disappear?
Well, then that wouldn't be James Churchward's Mu. James wrote that and was very explicit that there was volcanic action that filled up the Archean gas belts, and they blew out and to the surface, and the continent of Mu collapsed down on it, and they were all lost in a day.
So those gas belts, where are they?
I'm not sure they exist anymore since they collapsed.
Right.
James also writes that the Earth, the radius, decreased after that happened.
Right.
And the mountains were raised.
Do you know what? I that's how I was picturing it, that it was a collapse within the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's what he wrote.
Now, that's believable, isn't it, in one sense? You know, because how would you lose a continent? It's got to go inwards.
Most scientific evidence indicates that continents float above the mantle, the liquid mantle, and that there's really no place that, I mean, it's not solid down there for a gas belt or a tunnel or whatever to exist down there. And so continents float on top of the mantle. So the existence of an enormous continent in the middle of the Pacific Ocean is not really viable topic. It's they don't exist. And I don't know, if you speak about how the sea levels were lower, it still wouldn't encompass an enormous continent in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. Maybe in Sundaland, down near Indonesia and the Malaysia and in that area, but not in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. So that was another point that his information is a little off.
Hmm.
But like I said, if he just created Mu so that he could provide a background for the other part of the series, which were that we all came from the same place, which, you know, we all, it appears, came from Africa, and we're all the same family, and we're all the same human beings, just a few years down the road. James wrote that if we maybe could get back together and realize our shared human existence, that we wouldn't have as many wars and we wouldn't have as much struggle and strife through life.
So, yeah, it's but then again, when looking back at Mu and looking at some of the records that James brought back in the sense of the violence of them, it doesn't sound a great place neither.
Well, actually, he said it was a great place.
Did
Before the cataclysm.
So in the cataclysm, something calls them to turn on each other?
Oh, no. He said that the whole continent of Mu, all 64 million people, died in one day. It just sunk and just they all disappeared. And the people on some of the islands lived and they were just thrust into savagery. He said before that, savagery did not exist. And so I guess after the collapse of their civilization, people went crazy. Cannibalism and all kinds of crazy things were going on,
right?
According to James.
And that was still with the remnants of some of their technology they were doing that with.
Well, I don't know. Maybe they were so upset that they couldn't access their technology or their paranormal powers or whatever was keeping them afloat, as it were.
Right.
Their civilization afloat.
Right. Have you researched much to do with other people's theories on Atlantis?
On Atlantis, not particularly. I mean, I've read through Ignatius Donnelly's book on Atlantis, and I've read some people's books, yes. But as far as studying it, no.
Right, okay. I just wondered if there was any common threads from such study and, you know, within the James's work as well. Has anyone in the... I think you've had people from the megalith societies, I suppose that's one word for it, but, you know, interview you about this work as well, haven't you? And they've tried to connect some dots with your great-grandfather's work and their research now.
Well, I found that people other than you have asked me what my beliefs were first and then decided not to invite me. Well, thankfully for the listeners, you're allowing me to speak my mind and what my research actually shows.
I think really what I want to know as well, or try to know, is what did James talk about the way that they there any of their spiritual beliefs or any of their sort of practices in the sense of worship?
What he wrote was that the Nicol Brotherhood, tens of thousands of years ago, had found the link, and their religion was their science, and their science was their religion, and it was all integrated. And with their advanced understanding of science, of the workings of the universe, they were able to control physical phenomena.
Can I back that up a little bit in the sense that they'd embrace science and paranormal or mysticism in a sense, or spirituality, it's a theme of one of those, and mixed it together and it's almost like science was able to answer the questions of consciousness then in a sense.
That's what they believed, yes, that it was all interrelated. There was no demarcation between science and religion to them, is what James wrote.
Isn't
their understanding of the physical nature of the universe was their religion and science.
Isn't that interesting that that's potentially where we may go as well? I could see that as a direction that that leading edge physicists are sort of going on as well when they look at the simulated universe or they look at consciousness in a sense from a scientific perspective or some of the deeper subjects out there right now that you could see that, couldn't you, in a sense?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's interesting. That's right. Yet, it wasn't enough to save them, though, was it?
Well, that's another one of those things that makes you wonder if they had the ability to see the future, or if they had an advanced understanding of the universe, why couldn't they see that there were after the volcanic action started, why didn't they all get in boats and start moving someplace where they wouldn't die, all 64 million of them? And then why, if they were such an advanced civilization, why would they sink into savagery?
Well,
so quickly.
Could our species do that now? I mean, if there was some sort of continental mass world war, would we sink back down to that savagery? It does make you think, doesn't it? You would like to think, wouldn't you, that as we progress, as we're at the stage we are now in 2016, that we are more spiritually progressed, a lot of us. But then you look at the savagery with ISIS and other such religions out there, it's not that spiritually progressed sometimes, is it?
It takes all kinds.
It takes all kinds. So it's, you know, I'm just pulling the facts away from some of James's work, and it does kind of connect dots, doesn't it, a little bit. Were they exploring space at all?
Oh, negative. No, James doesn't write anything about aliens or anything like that.
I only say that from a space perspective is that, you know, we have, well, America has NASA, well, it's an international group nowadays in a sense, with the International Space Station, and we're not as advanced as, it's difficult to say, are we as advanced as Atlantis or the continent of Mu was, but we have...
James wrote that they rode around in the Vimanas. So they could fly around the planet.
They could fly around. Yeah, but so where was their? Were they looking? Did they have their own ISS? Probably not, by the sound of it.
No, James never writes about going into outer space. He said he never writes about that.
No,
and visitors from outer space or the Anunnaki were not included in his writings.
Right, because you know about the Anunnaki then a little bit, and you know about Zachariah Sitchin's writing and others such like him, where, you know, we were a slave people and we were generated to, you know, mine for gold or whatever we were created for, or our DNA was altered from what it was to what it is now, hence the missing link from the ape to us. Nothing of that talk, no. But then again, you know, if he's only seeing a few tablets, I mean, that's not really giving the bigger picture of this continent. It's just giving someone's truth that was on that tablet at the time.
That's what he said, yes. But he said there were quite a few tablets, not right. The complete set that one might normally expect to find, he said. But there was one place supposedly in Tibet where he visited, where he was able to see an ancient map before the mountains were raised and before Mu collapsed, and that there was a full set, and he looked at some of them, he said.
Do you think or did James ever think that there was any connection between Egypt and the lost continent of Mu, in the sense that when Mu was destroyed, that, or, and I'm guessing Atlantis is in there somewhere, there's a destruction of Atlantis at the same time, is there, do you think?
Yes, that's what he wrote.
Right, okay.
And he said that there were two different methods or ways that Egypt... He made a distinction between Upper and Lower Egypt, that the Lower Egypt came via came from the west, and the Upper Egypt came from the east through different routes from Mu.
So could that have been the more advanced ones from that survived Mu or Atlantis, were the ones that maybe on the upper side built Egypt's pyramids, in a sense, or was connected in some sort of way to that construction?
I really don't believe so.
No.
I mean, okay. Most of our scientific evidence indicates that that our ancestors migrated out of Africa into the Middle East and further in several different waves. And then we have the Denisovians and the and there's that other species that they are still looking for, and you know, you've got the hobbits from that other island in Flores in Indonesia. But they all supposedly came out of Africa. I mean, at least that's what I believe genetic studies has shown today.
Right, right. And what color skin, what ethnicity were the Mu, were the people from the continent of Mu then?
Well, that gets into the racist aspects of James' writings. When you mention what skin color they were, James wrote that originally the people that came from Mu to, for instance, Central America, were, he called them Mayas. They're different than the Mayas today. The Mayas were a white people, and they came in and they built all the structures. And then after that, they grew complacent, and the Mongols came and took over and chased out the white people. And the white people then moved to Europe and started the Aryan civilization. I find that to be extremely racist, that the people that built the monuments on all across Polynesia and in Central America and in South America and in North America are the people that Columbus ran into when he didn't actually get to Americas, but when the white people came here, the people they encountered are the people that built the mounds across North America, and the Mayans, the real Mayans that still live there, are the ones that built the monuments that they have there. And it wasn't some advanced culture that came in and run off. So, yes, James believed that the white people were in charge of Mu, and there were other people, but they didn't play a dominant role, according to his words.
Well, you know, okay, so it was Mother Nature that took them out in the end, by the sound of it.
Absolutely. That's what he wrote.
And she's a powerful beast, Mother Nature. I wonder if that's a potential of what we've got in store for us in a future timeline, in the sense that, you know, that the Earth is going to go through some major changes. Forget any big world wars. It's Mother Nature that's... you know, that's going to be making any changes. It's in, you know, it makes you think, doesn't it?
Could happen tomorrow.
It could do, couldn't it? Yeah, I mean, are we, you know, do we learn from our history? You know, it's so easy. You know, I can see why you've stuck with the facts on this, and it must be difficult sometimes, because you must have come up against, especially with your background, you must have come up against a lot of, people's anger, and also people who only stick with facts, which is what you know you were taught to do in your studies.
Well, I do get a lot of, well, I don't get a lot of, but I do get hate mail, and people saying nasty things about me, and you know, all I said was that I'm going to look at it from a scientific point of view. I'm going to look at it with common sense, and for instance, If you were looking at the previous example of the white people that built all the monuments and then were chased off by the Mongols, if they were all from Mu, how is it possible that in their peaceful, loving, get-along society, where did the Mongols come from?
Right.
To go in and chase them all off.
Of course, yeah, of course. You mentioned your father earlier on in this interview as well. He didn't have a lot of time for his dad's stories then, by the sound of it.
Great-grandfather.
Great-grandfather.
He had time. He had plenty of time to listen to his great-grandmother. And she really, I don't believe, had anything good to say ever concerning my great-grandfather, according to my father at least.
Right, that makes it more difficult for you, I suppose, with bringing this story out in one sense. And was it against the story or just him as a character?
She was left behind. They lost their tea plantations, and James needed to get out of India or out of Sri Lanka. And so I have no evidence that he reconnected with his wife and my grandfather after that.
Oh, I see.
And so essentially, right. So there was an abandonment. I believe they were in England or Britain, and he, I guess, left Sri Lanka and went the other way and came to the United States. So she really had nothing nice to say, because there was no payments, and she was the one that inherited the tea plantations, not James. And so he lost everything.
Oh, gosh. Right. Okay. So he wasn't actually... Was he an American, born an American then, James?
Absolutely not.
No, right.
He was born in Brightstow, Devon.
Oh, he was British. Right. Okay. So your great-grandmother would have been British as well. Right. Okay.
They were married in Kensington. Right. In 1871, I believe.
Wow. Now, that would have been a time where you could have just walked over to the States and became an American citizen. God, how I wish I could do that today. Yeah. So, wow. What a different period in our history. So they never... Okay, so James ended up in America, and...
And so did my great-grandmother eventually.
That's the piece I was trying to put together. Yes. Okay. So they did end up back together in America.
Not together. James had a completely different life from his biography, a pretty fun life. He didn't stick with just one woman. Had lots of fun and did lots of... He was a sportsman, and he's got several... A dozen patents. He was led an exciting life.
And do you think that? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's that's interesting. But as you have said throughout this interview, he still kept the secret. Well, not secret, but he still kept the story to himself for all that time before he released it. Did he ever tell anybody about his findings back in the 70s, 1870s?
Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
Another fun thing is his brother was Albert Churchward, the Freemason author, and also the personal surgeon of Aleister Crowley. And he wrote many books and traveled widely, Albert did. And it might be a coincidence that it wasn't until after Albert passed away that James started to write his books.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, at least you've had the strength in yourself as well to just stick with the facts and release this book, because there's something in it, isn't there? Don't you feel that? There's something in this story.
Well, another one of the motivating factors is... For instance, James speaks about his encounters with the Rishi, and the Rishi talks about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who were, you know, thrown in the fire, and they walked out and astonished the king, or the Babylonian king at the time, when they were in captivity, obviously, and it's an Old Testament story. And James writes about it and mentions that the Rishi had him pick up a hot coal while the Rishi was teaching him or demonstrating this power to him. I have witnessed individuals that were able to remove things from 400-degree ovens and place them on the counter or whatever without hot pads. Or reach into a fire and move logs and things around. I don't want to identify them, because some of these are abilities that are only gained through deep personal reflection and the ability to conquer the afflictions of the mind and to focus your mind on being able to take away all the disparaging thoughts and all the negativity, and to clean your mind. They are able to, and they're dangerous in that individuals who attempt this course of study and have not completely quieted their mind and released all the anguish and hatred and all the emotions, who are still, you know, they're tied to them, that it could cause them to go mad and crazy. And so that individuals that do study this and are able to demonstrate these abilities don't talk about it, and they don't openly show it. The only reason I saw it is that I was just happened to notice and turned around and went, "Wait a minute, you're not supposed to do that." And he said, "No, and don't tell anybody." But the fact is that I believe that some of these abilities are possible. What I don't believe is that everybody that aspires to have them does so with the correct intentions, because they're not an ability to have to help you in the world. They're a byproduct of your understanding of your mind.
What's the bigger conclusion in all this, then, would you say? What have you concluded that, you know, could bring about you kind of mentioned it before as well, but bring about some betterness or something improvingness or something that could help us in the moment now from the lost knowledge of Mu?
Well, to understand, first of all, that the underlying part of his underlying theory is extreme racism and denying people all over the world their own history. That's something that needs to be changed, and realize that, for instance, the monuments in Chichen Itza were done by the Mayans way back when, and it wasn't white people. Another thing is to understand that we're all the same family, that we're all the same people, and which scientific evidence has shown to be the truth. That's one thing where James was right. And those are the things that I got out of it that are, first of all, correct the record and let them have their history. And the second is that we're all, you know, we're all family here. And there's no reason for hatred or bloodshed to get your own way or to get an advantage over this person or that one. There's plenty to share, I hope.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, that's so true. That's so true. And with this research as well, what direction do you think you'll be going with it in the future? Or do you think you've written as much as you can do on it?
Actually, I'm going to start looking at the information James puts out about the Great Uyghur Empire, which was in Asia. Obviously, the Uyghur people are much in the news today with their condition of what the Chinese government is putting them through in Xinjiang, also known as Eastern Turkestan.
Okay. So that's all right. So and that's something you'll be working on pretty soon.
Yes. Excellent. I've already started.
Okay. Okay. Well, I think, oh yes. And your website as well, please.
Okay. JACK.churchward.com.
Excellent.
And that'll provide links to, my books and interviews and videos and all kinds, and my research.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay, well, we've been putting your books and your website on the screen as we've been discussing this this research. And I'd just like to say, Jack Churchward, thank you so, so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me on, Kevin.
Well, we've come to an end on tonight's show. Don't forget that you can listen and watch all our past interviews on the More Show's official YouTube channel. Remember to subscribe to our YouTube channel for new daily shows. You may also find out more on all past and upcoming guests on the show via themoreshow.com, and do like us on Facebook and Twitter for the latest updates. So until next time, be safe.